The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show.
You know, sometimes Eric pretends to be interested in his guests,
but he's really just doing a crossword puzzle and rolling his eyes at what they say.
He told me never to say that, ever. But look, I made a mistake. Uh-oh.
I'm human.
In my way.
Only I'm not.
And now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. Welcome to Hour 2 of the Eric Metaxas Show. Hour 2 typically comes after Hour 1, but you can listen in whatever order you like. I have kept John Zmirak over from Hour 1. And John, before I ask you to continue with your theories of what is really going on in the country, I want to mention, since we're sort of on the topic, that our friend Larry Elder has come out with a movie, and I'm asking my audience to check it out. It's called Uncle Tom, the movie. It is brilliant. You can go to UncleTom.com. That URL was not taken. UncleTom.com, and check it out. But you owe it to yourself and to your kids to understand Larry Elder and the Black conservative movement, what they say about what is happening in the country and about their history. It is absolutely magnificent. I hope everybody in America watches Uncle Tom, Uncle Tom the movie, UncleTom.com. So John Zmirak, you're going down the list of theories in your article at stream.org. You've gone through three of them. What's the title of your article?
It's No Lives Matter. It's simple.
Oh, it's the same article, No Lives Matter. Okay.
If you don't give money to No Lives Matter, I'm going to denounce you in public and get you fired from your job, and your high school yearbooks will erase your picture. All your social media accounts will disappear. But, you know, no pressure. Just send money to No Lives Matter or I will ruin your life. Okay, so theory three was that China is pouring money and using influence to promote riots and chaos in our streets so that they can crack down on Hong Kong and destroy democracy there. They can continue to run their concentration camps in which they imprison almost 2 million Muslim Uyghurs and other ethnic groups and cut them open and steal their organs and sell them on the international market. You get in the Planned Parenthood connection there? These people think alike. Maybe the same screw tapes are working with them behind the scenes.
Oh, no, look, well, let's be clear, because, again, there are people who they're not putting this together. If your worldview is not a biblical worldview, then on what basis do you say lives matter? And how do you tell the Communist Party in China that they shouldn't kill their prisoners, that they shouldn't do whatever they like because the state is all powerful, the individual has no inherent dignity as accorded by the Bible or as accorded by governments that, you know, were founded by people who believe in the Bible and believe in the inherent dignity of man? You don't believe in that. So what is wrong with treating people this way? It is open racism, putting the Uyghur Muslims in concentration camps. And then, as you said, John, and we're not making this up, I wish we were.
Forbes magazine is my source for the claim that China is cutting organs out of political prisoners and selling them. So go down and tell it to Forbes if you think I'm making that up.
Yeah, no, we posted that article. It's true and it follows. This is why people have to understand about worldview. If you don't have a biblical worldview, don't pretend that your worldview doesn't lead to this. I'm sorry to say it that bluntly. Okay, so John,
theory number four.
To what you just said, though, I think that the Chinese they're brilliant. They want power. They're ruthless. And why wouldn't they do anything they could with the naive Americans? Why wouldn't they stir the pot and try to cause trouble domestically? Why wouldn't they do that?
Right. Well, we did it in Libya. We did it we do it all over the world. We attempt regime change. Now we know what it feels like. Ain't fun, is it? So theory number four in my article, No Lives Matter. I'm asking, why are rioters pulling down statues of abolitionists, Union soldiers, Abraham Lincoln, Ulysses S. Grant. Why do that? Are they? What is the logic behind that? But there is, sadly, a logic behind that. All those statutes have to come down because those people are guilty of the crime of emancipating while white. We remember Nicholas Sandman, his life was almost destroyed for smiling and standing still while white. But this is much worse. To actually free the slaves, to actually eliminate the institution of slavery, while being a white person, that makes you, and this is not something I'm making up, this is a Black Lives Matter terminology, it makes you a so-called white savior. It means that you are taking away Black people's agency by eliminating slavery instead of letting them do it themselves. Not making this up.
Paternalism, and yes, it rubs them the wrong way.
We have to pretend that the Civil War was a slave revolt, like the one in Haiti.
Right.
And that Black Americans liberated themselves, overthrew their masters, overthrew their oppressors, and turned the South into a Black Republic like Haiti, which it has been since 1865. Okay. That's the kind of historical revisionism we have to engage in. Or at least, why else tear down Lincoln and Grant unless you really want to remove reminder that white people were involved?
You're absolutely right. Okay, so what are 5 and 6? I want to make sure we have time in this.
Okay, theory five. The Democrats are using the rioters, that they are the provisional wing of the Democratic Party. The way in Ireland, you have Sinn Féin, which is a legal political party, and it has a terrorist wing, the Irish Republican Army. The Democrats now have their own terrorist wing, which will tear down statues, burn buildings, blow things up, threaten people in the streets. And then when the Democrats decide, okay, that's enough chaos, we think we've tipped the election, they snap their fingers and it stops like it did in Seattle. Are these organizations just the paramilitary wing of the Democratic Party, the way the brown shirts were the paramilitary wing of the Nazis? The communists had a group they called Antifa, which was their paramilitary group, and the Ku Klux Klan was the paramilitary wing of the Democratic Party up through the 1930s. So I think the Democrats like having a paramilitary wing. It's in their history, and now they've got enough.
I mean, look, it's in their worldview and in their DNA, I'm very sorry to say. Okay, so what's the final theory?
My final one is Hulk no like vertical structures, Hulk smash. If the rioters are really in charge and they're just tearing down every statue, every vertical structure they come up against, it's because they're nihilistic Gnostics who hate the world the way God made it, want to destroy it and start from scratch. Like the villains in a Dostoevsky novel, especially the possessed, like the nihilists and anarchists in the 19th century. Eric Voegelin, a great political thinker, talks about them as Gnostics because they consider the world as it exists is so evil it has to be destroyed and we have to rebuild from the rubble according to our private fantasies of what utopia would look like. That's another theory.
Well, it's interesting, John, because it does seem like a satanic project. In other words, it seems like when you think about unleashing forces of destruction in this way, the idea that destruction itself is an end in itself, there's something about tearing down everything because everything is tainted. I mean, that's a deeply sick view, but it does seem to be at work here. In other words, it seems to be, it's almost like Freud saying, you just need to express yourself, get your yayas out, smash some windows, tear some things down, and you'll feel better. There's something important about doing that, even though it has no real end except destruction. I mean, it's a bizarre thing, but this is kind of what's happening.
So the way the Taliban destroyed statues, the way the Khmer Rouge burned books and killed everyone with glasses, the way the French Revolution restarted its calendar at the year zero, so did fascist Italy. They wanted to get rid of the birth of Christ as the hinge point of history. Their revolution was the hinge point of history. So this is why I oppose tearing down any statue. No Confederates, don't take down the statue of Margaret Sanger, don't take down anything. This generation is drunk, take away its car keys, wait for it to sober up, get back to me in 5 years and maybe we can have a conversation.
I think we'll leave it there, John. I'm just so grateful for your voice. I want to tell my audience that they need to follow you on Twitter if they're on Twitter, and they need to read you at stream.org. I hope homeschoolers all over America will read their daily John Zmirak article Monday through Friday. John, thank you so much.
Thank you, Eric.
Hey there, folks. Welcome back to the Eric Metaxas Show. And we like to do some provocative shows now and again. We haven't done one in years, but I thought today we would have a provocative guest on. My guest is Nick Adams. He's one of the fictional characters from some of the Hemingway books. You'll be familiar with that. We've rarely had a fictional character on before. Nick Adams, welcome to the program.
Eric Metaxas, it's a pleasure, it's an honor, it's a privilege. I'm looking forward to joining you and your listeners for a few moments.
Wait a minute. Hemingway didn't have any Australian characters. Aren't you? You sound like you're from Australia.
I know. Isn't that something? Fiction is an odd thing. But I am here. I'm not as exciting as the fictional character, but I'm certainly going to do my best.
You're not a Hemingway character. Is that what you're claiming?
Yes, sir. That's right.
But, okay, I'm confused. You must be Nick Adams, the author. Are you the author?
Yes, that's one of my many hats. Nick Adams, the author, is what we'll go with.
What else are you known for, Nick Adams?
In Dallas, Texas, I'm a legal immigrant to the United States of America, Eric. I've had a very interesting life. I was the youngest ever elected deputy mayor in Australian history in Sydney at the age of 21. I am now a four-time best-selling author. I run a national nonprofit called FLAG, which is the Foundation for Liberty and American Greatness, all about teaching civics and promoting patriotism in public schools. I appear regularly on Fox News and Fox Business. What else can I tell you? I'm good looking and my charisma is abundant.
Exactly. I was just going to say that. All right. So we've established that you're a non-fictional character appearing on this program under your real name, Nick Adams, and you have written a book. The reason we're having you on is because you have a book out. When did the book come out, by the way?
The book just came out a couple of weeks ago, Eric.
And the title I want to tell my audience is Trump and Churchill. Talk about provocative. I myself have often thought that Trump has Churchillian elements in the way that he leads this country. But it's a provocative thing to say to some people. And so I was excited about having you on to talk about that book. Before we talk about that book, tell me a little bit about the organization, the acronym FLAG. It's the Foundation for Liberty and American Greatness. You said to promote civics and patriotism in schools. Nothing could be closer to my heart, Nick Adams. I wrote a book called If You Can Keep It, and I want to get that in the hands of every high schooler in the United States of America, because what you're doing, what FLAG, your organization is doing, is to me as important as anything we could do as Americans, as human beings right now, because this is the country that holds up the banner of freedom. So if you don't mind, before we talk about the book, tell us a little bit about this organization, because I'm fascinated and thrilled to hear about it.
Sure. So FLAG is a 501c3 educational nonprofit, Eric. And as I said, we have two goals. One is to teach civics, and two is to put patriotism back in public schools. We do it three ways. Number one, through classroom visits. Number two, through the creation and distribution of kid-friendly resources relating to the founding documents. So we worked with interns from the late Justice Antonin Scalia's office, and we got the United States Constitution into plain, simple, easy-to-understand English that even a fifth grader can comprehend. We had such stunning success with that resource that we then went on and did the same thing with the Declaration of Independence, selected readings of the Federalist Papers, and our most recent resource is the Citizen's Guide to the Electoral College. We now have at least one of those four resources in the hands of more than 750,000 public school students in all 50 states. And the third way that we carry out our mission, Eric, is by teaching the teachers how to teach civics the way that it used to be taught. So we hold professional development programs for public school teachers where they get a certain amount of hours towards their continuing professional development requirements that, are needed each year in order for them to be able to keep teaching. And we make sure that they are in a position to teach civics objectively and the way that you were taught it.
Well, actually, I wasn't taught it that way. I learned it later in life, which is the horror. Okay. But then once I understood these things, I was so staggered that I wrote my book, If You Can Keep It. I said, we have to train this generation of Americans to understand what it is to be an American. And so it's tremendously gratifying to hear of you and your organization. You're just honestly, Nick, thrilled to hear about it. So let's turn to the topic of your new book, Trump and Churchill. What led you to write such a book?
Look, I've been a lifelong admirer of both men, Eric. When I was just a little boy, my dad came and gave me a book of Winston Churchill's speeches, and I was enamored. I was captured by that. I've always been interested in speaking and writing and all of that kind of stuff. And then when I was 14 years old, one of my best friends came to me and said, Nick, have you ever heard of this guy called Donald Trump? I've read this book called The Art of the Deal, and I think you should read it. So I went on to read that book and became a fan of Donald Trump as well. And I was an early supporter of Donald Trump when he entered the race on the 16th of June, 2015. And slowly but surely, when I saw him as the candidate and then have observed him now in the last 3.5 years that he's been president, it began to strike me just how similar Winston Churchill and Donald Trump really are. Now, Eric, it's not an immediate comparison that springs to mind. On the surface, of course, both men are profoundly different. One, 5'6" and loved to drink. The other, a 6'4" teetotaler. One napped in his pajamas every day and really every opportunity he possibly got. The other, from all accounts, barely sleeps. One began their career by opposing tariffs. The other by introducing them. One was this soaring, compelling, great orator. The other, not so much, a rather crude but nevertheless effective tweeter. So there are lots of things that they don't have in common on the surface. But as soon as you drill a little bit deeper, you find that the two men are actually remarkably similar. Neither concealed their true self or conformed to expectations. Both were intensely disliked, even hated. Both loved their country, clear thinkers and plain speakers, alpha males. Both endured battles with the political establishment. Both had an acrimonious relationship with the media. Both followed monumentally weak leaders. Of course, Winston Churchill had Neville Chamberlain and Donald Trump had Barack Obama. And to suggest that Chamberlain and Obama had the spine of a jellyfish, well, that might be defaming jellyfish. So I think that that juxtaposition only serves to really heighten the leadership qualities and traits of both leaders.
Well, I was going to say that the thing about when you refer to Churchill's oratory, he wrote his speeches very, very carefully and really thought about it, I guess, about as much as one could think about what one was going to say in advance. Trump, on the other hand, although he often reads from a teleprompter what some others have written, he is a master at extemporaneous commentary, much of which is brilliantly funny. And so it is very different, but what the two have in common is an ability to connect and inspire audiences with their words, which I have to say that we've not seen the likes of that in our time.
as far as I'm concerned, Trump is sui generis, to use the Latin. I've never seen anything like it. And I think it's what makes some people despise him, and it's what makes some people really love him, because he is, he goes way out there in terms of what he says. But I want to get back to in your comparison, when you talk about Churchill facing a hostile press and stuff, we think of him as a hero today. Who is opposing him in his day?
Well, there were lots of people, Eric. There were lots of people. And in my book, Trump and Churchill, Defenders of Western Civilization, we've actually gone and reproduced excerpts from British national newspapers in the mid to late 1930s, early 1940s. And it's incredible. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. If I read those excerpts out aloud to you, you would think that I was quoting the New York Times or the Washington Post.
When we come back, we're going to get some of those quotes. Folks, don't go away.
Great expectations. Everybody's watching you.
The Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump wants to meet you. This will be the first opportunity he's had to meet with American patriots like you since our country started reopening. His team will cover the flight and hotel and give you VIP access for yourself and a guest. He'll even take a picture with you. All you have to do is text VIP to 88022 today for your chance to meet President Trump. Again, that's VIP to 88022 for your chance to win and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for 4 more years.
Hi, folks. Trying times. Just know they won't last. Trying times can be hard on our digestive tract. So why not try Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com? Life Change Tea is an herbal blend of tea that helps the digestive tract and the colon cleanse from intruders. For years, people have experienced the benefits from Life Change Tea. And so can you. Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. And for those of you that want to go a step further, we have non-GMO organic supplements. If you're listening to Eric, you're informed and educated. So how about free shipping? Just go to the checkout, find the coupon code, enter Eric, E-R-I-C, hit apply, and receive free shipping. Again, Eric, in the coupon code, hit apply, free shipping. These historic times will pass. The yuck in your gut will pass also with GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com.
Folks, welcome back. I'm talking to Nick Adams, the author of Trump and Churchill. Holy cow. All right, Nick, you were just going to quote to us some of what the media said about Churchill, whom we regard generally very, very highly today, one of the greatest leaders of the 20th century. So what did his detractors say about him in his day?
Well, so many of the detractors were saying the exact same thing about Winston Churchill, Eric, that they say about Donald Trump today, that he's too optimistic, overconfident, doesn't listen to anybody. The criticisms are almost identical. The criticisms of the style are almost identical, that they're brutish, that they have no elegance, that there's no class attached to them. So it's really incredible to see just how history is replaying itself with Donald Trump. Winston Churchill was vigorously opposed. And it's because Churchill, much like Trump, both men, Eric, disruptors, agents of change. And whenever you get people like that, of course, there are going to be people that have existed in that fold that they're now in that are really upset that things are going to change, that they're being criticized, that their cozy little world has been upended and is going to be recreated. And they tend to be very jealous, particularly if you're successful at your goal of reforming the place.
Yeah, that's very interesting. It's funny to think the way Churchill connected with your average working class Briton, of his day. He had an ability, though he was to the manner born, my goodness, born in Blenheim Palace, one of the most extraordinary buildings that I've ever seen. Born there, raised, as an aristocrat, and yet had a magnificent ability to speak to those men and women who were working class, who were the backbone of the country. It seems to me that that's the bizarre parallel with Trump, that a man who obviously was raised in some wealth and success, and who's a billionaire, has the ability to connect with working class people. Typically, that's not the case. And I think it's one of the things that the so-called cultural elites resent about him.
They certainly do. They certainly do. I mean, in President Trump's case, he's the billionaire businessman that has the tastes of a blue-collar worker in terms of what he eats and how he behaves and what he might say. And so that is a really interesting thing. And In the Darkest Hour, the movie that came out a couple of years ago, many of your listeners might recall a scene where Prime Minister Churchill boards the train at the Tube, and he talks with regular people, and he really is well received. And there are great parallels there between Trump and Churchill. I think the thing with Churchill, Eric, is that he was so relatable. He was incredibly relatable. He ate a little bit too much. He drank a little bit too much. He got gout. I mean, these are things that I think people can really relate to and make him very real. And I think Donald Trump in many ways also has that benefit with the average person.
Yeah, I think that's quite right. I don't think too many construction workers have gout, but I know what you're talking about. It is interesting that people identify with Trump in a way that I think they did identify with Churchill. And let's talk about this. We're talking about two leaders, and I think one of the things that is rarely said these days is that people want a leader who speaks for them and to whom they can feel close. Even if they never meet him, they feel that they know him. And it seems to me that one of the main parallels between Churchill and Trump is that there are people who do feel that he speaks for them, he understands me, in dramatic contrast to most others who have held the office of president or who are leaders today, that they don't understand me. When we think of folks like Nancy Pelosi, you can't think of anyone who would seem less to understand your average American today. So I think that's a principal parallel between the two of them.
I think that analysis is pretty astute, Eric, in very typical fashion for you. Look, I think that it's true that Donald Trump really does speak to the heart of the everyday, regular, ordinary American man and woman who is busy paying off their mortgage, saving up their money to send their children off to college, growing their businesses. And that is something that is increasingly rare because the elite political class have really kind of decided what the style is and what you should say and what you shouldn't say and how you should say the things that you're meant to say. And so for somebody that comes and rebuffs that, for somebody that comes and says, you know, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be authentic. I'm going to be more genuine. I'm not going to follow the playbook. I think that really resonates with people because they admire that boldness. They admire that courage, and everybody appreciates directness, being forthright, and candor.
Well, candor, you know, at the top of the list, the one thing that Americans have come to expect from political figures is an absence of candor. Someone who makes promises will routinely forget about them once he is elected. That's one of the most dramatic things that I've seen about Trump, his ability to continually bring up what he said he would do and the fact that he's doing it. We'll be right back with Nick Adams. The book is Trump and Churchill.
Well, in walked a man with a gun in his hand, and he was That old wheel is gonna roll around once more. When it does, it will even up the score. Don't be weak.
Folks, welcome back. I'm talking to Nick Adams, the author of Trump and Churchill. Nick Adams is not a fictional character from Hemingway. He's a nonfiction character. And I believe Trump and Churchill are also nonfiction characters. So we're all on the same page. I'm a nonfiction character. We're all very much real. Although, let me go back, Nick, in talking about the parallels, as you do in your book, between Trump and Churchill. Maybe the biggest one is you talk in the subtitle of your book, Trump and Churchill, about Western civilization, that the two of them somehow, in the middle of the battles in which they find themselves, are fighting simultaneously a larger battle with regard to trying to preserve what we call Western civilization or Christian Western civilization. Tell us about that.
Well, that's right. And what's interesting, Eric, is that they were fighting a bigger battle. Trump's battle is on the inside, whereas Churchill's battle was on the outside. But nevertheless, there is a greater adversary out there. What I find really remarkable about both of these men, and the reason why I think that Donald Trump is going to be looked upon very favorably with the passage of time, his presidency, is that defenders of Western civilization, defenders of traditional Western values, both men, and you look at the United States of America, and a lot of people might say, well, how is Donald Trump being president fighting the deep state and fighting all of these internal actors? How on earth is that defending Western civilization? But people that make that argument, Eric, I find miss the broader point, which is this, that the world's fortunes travel with the United States. When America is strong, the world is strong. When America is weak, the world is a weak and dangerous place. And so America being healthy, America being robust, America being self-confident, America being self-assertive is in the interests, I think, of every single person on the planet, fiction or nonfiction. So, if Donald Trump can save America, Donald Trump saves Western civilization. If America goes down the path of Europe, then America becomes a weak and diluted country, which means that we've got nothing stopping all the bad guys coming in and completely taking over. So in many ways, both men are doing the same thing.
Isn't that the key? In other words, I think that the globalist and today Democrat hard left narrative pretends to care about the downtrodden, or at least believes, perhaps, to give them the benefit of the doubt, that they care for the downtrodden of every ilk. But in reality, their policies have harmed those who suffer. And so what we're facing today is whether we have the courage to say, I distance myself from those anti-Western globalists. I distance myself from those anti-Western leftists who claim to care for the poor, and I ally myself with groups and ideologies that genuinely care for the poor. That's the battle today, is to try to help people understand that just because people say they care for the poor, they've had many years to prove that they're helping the poor or blacks or whatever disenfranchised group we're talking about. I guess what I want to home in on is that both Churchill and Trump, as you say in your book, Trump and Churchill, both of them had an ability in the darkest hour, to quote the title of that movie, to inspire people and to give people encouragement. Anyone alive during the Blitz in London needed tremendous encouragement. Anyone alive in America with everything that's going on right now, with the economic devastation brought on by the Wuhan virus, this has been devastating. And so to have somebody who is relentlessly positive and inspiring, as Churchill was then and as Trump is now, that to me is maybe the most dramatic example of how they're similar.
Very much so. Very much so. Both men believe in the power of positive thinking. Both men relentlessly optimistic. And of course, that also draws the detractors. Mayor Bill de Blasio accused President Trump during the worst of the invisible enemy of peddling a false optimism. So these guys get hit for it. But I agree with you. There is nothing more inspiring and nothing better than seeing a leader who is out there speaking to his people, reminding his people of better times, promising them better times, and backing it up. And one of the things that's close to my heart, Eric, because that's one of the things that I really believe. I believe that this is the greatest country in the history of the world. I believe that the United States of America has afforded more opportunity and more freedom to more people than anywhere else. And I think that despite all of the indisputable problems, challenges, threats, and realities that currently afflict the United States of America, this is still easily the greatest country in the world. It's the best place to be born in, to live in, to work in, to start a business in, to grow a business in. And every single time I speak to an elementary school, middle school, public high school, or college audience, I look those students in the eyes and I tell them that the day that they were born here or the day that they moved here permanently is the day that they won the lottery of life and they got this incredible head start. And it's a message that I love that Donald Trump is constantly parroting. And I think we need to hear more and more of it from lots of people.
Well, I love the fact that you get this. I love the fact that you didn't grow up here and nonetheless, you get this. My father, who came to this country legally from Greece, he got it and he raised me to love America. And of course, what that means, and you can underscore it the more easily when you have an accent or when you're talking to somebody with a non United States accent, that this is the nation of nations. This is a nation based on ideas, and anyone can buy into this. And the principal reason I want America to be wildly successful is so that we can export our ideas to every nation in the world. These are free ideas. We'll be right back. Final segment. Nick Adams' book is True Trump and Churchill. Folks, I'm talking to Nick Adams, not the Hemingway character, Nick Adams. No, we're talking about Nick Adams, the real person. Nick, your book is called Trump and Churchill. If people want to get a copy, first of all, where shall they go?
NickAdamsUSA.com, Eric, is the best place. That's NickAdamsUSA.com for signed and personalized copies. If you'd like to find out more about FLAG, the Foundation for Liberty and American Greatness, and our work in public schools involving civics, you can go to FLAGUSA.org. That's FLAGUSA.org.
When we, typically every day we put out information on Facebook and on Twitter for the show. And I want to make sure that we have links both to NickAdamsUSA.com and to it's FLAGUSA.org?
Yes, that's correct.
FLAGUSA.org. That's a pretty good URL. Is that what it's called?
It's a pretty good URL.
Pretty well done. So Nick, you live in Dallas now. Do you have family here in the States?
I do. I moved my mum and dad over, Eric. I finally got my green card in 2016. It was a long process, took me 4.5 years, cost me lots and lots of money. But I've got an extraordinary ability green card. Next year, I become a citizen of the United States. So I'm very excited about that. I too.
How is it that that you, you know, are so fast-tracked? I assume it's because you have extraordinary abilities that we want in America.
That's what they tell me. That's what they tell me. I think my fiction character title might have assisted in that, Eric. But look, I came to the United States of America for all of the reasons that I outlined to you a few moments ago. But I also came here, and this is why I started FLAG, in no small way to make sure that the United States of America doesn't turn out like all of the rest of the countries in the world. I, like you, am a child of Greek immigrants, and in Australia, Adamopoulos was the last name.
Oh, you're going to tell me that now? Nick, that's hilarious. Nikolaos Adamopoulos.
Adamopoulos. Nick, Akrivos.
That's amazing, Akrivos. There's so many Greeks in Australia. It's funny, right? It's like Chicago, New York, Australia.
Yeah. Tons of Sydney, Greek. Melbourne, all of them. Yes, sir.
A Greek Australian American. I love it. I love it.
God bless America.
Yeah, my goodness. So you're still a single man?
I'm still a single man. Yes, sir.
Not after this program. Oh, my goodness.
I'm looking forward to some nice Greek American ladies.
Yeah. Nice Greek American ladies. It really is. That is so funny to me that you come from a Greek background. Now, when you say that, I always have to ask, you know, how many generations back, when did your folks leave Greece and come to Australia?
So my grandparents moved to Australia in the early 1950s, and my father was born in 1957. And so I think that makes me technically second generation Greek.
Yes, that's right. You're of my daughter's generation, but my daughter doesn't know the word akrivos. So go to the head of the class. Nick Adams. So you do live in Dallas, but you obviously travel. Do you ever get to the New York area?
All the time. I'm there for Fox News commitments regularly. And I actually, I substitute host for a lot of your colleagues on the Salem Network. I sub host for Dennis Prager and Hugh Hewitt and Larry Elder and Mike Gallagher. So I'd love to catch up with you at some point.
When we're going to be moving back into our studios by God's grace soon. So next time you come to New York, give us a shout and perhaps we can have you in the big, beautiful studio. Nick Adams, a pleasure. Folks, the book is called Trump and Churchill. You can go to nickadamsusa.com. I would if I were you. Nick, thanks.
Thank you, Eric.